This is the Everything Financial Radio Program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. The Everything Financial Radio Program is brought to you each week by PLP Services. Welcome. We're glad you decided to listen in today. Joining me on today's program is the publisher and author of the newsletter Addicted to Profits, Mr. David Skarica. He'll be joining me for three segments today, the second and third and fourth segment of today's program. I will be talking to David about what he thinks is going to happen to stocks moving ahead, especially given this big post-election rally in stocks. I'll also be talking to him about what he sees moving ahead for U.S. government bonds and gold. So consider it a preview for your portfolio for 2017 on today's program with Mr. David Skarica. You know, as I have been talking here on the Everything Financial Radio program, this is the second to the last program that we will be airing here for your education when it comes to what to do with your money and what's going on in the economy. You can keep in touch with us moving ahead by subscribing to the newsletter that we publish each and every week titled Portfolio Watch. All you have to do to subscribe is go to the website, yourportfoliowatch.com. That's your, Y-O-U-R, portfoliowatch.com. When you sign up to become a newsletter subscriber, all you'll need to do is give us your name and email address, and then every Monday at 5 p.m., we will send you the latest edition of Portfolio Watch. You know, I've been having conversations with people about what do I think moving ahead? What do I think that this new Trump administration will mean for the economy? And well, as many of you know, I share the position of former guest here on the program, Gerald Celente, that I tend to be a political atheist. One of the things that I like about what I see moving ahead is that this administration seems to be, or at least some of those being appointed to positions of authority in this administration, are in favor of a gold standard. Now, I'm not necessarily a gold bug, but I certainly do agree and believe that some method of restraint in spending in Washington is long overdue, and I think most of you would probably agree with that. Now, the New York Sun, and I'm pulling this information from former guest here on the program, Mr. Jim Willey's newsletter. It's the hat trick letter. And the New York Sun, when Donald Trump appointed Mike Pence, or nominated Mike Pence for the vice presidential position, said this: Donald Trump's choice of Mike Pence for vice president would be a promising pick for those of us who see a restoration of sound money as the essential precondition for returning America's economic trajectory to jobs and growth. Now, the reason that many, if not most, politicians don't like the gold standard is that it allows them to print dishonest money. On a gold standard, you can only print paper money to the extent that you have gold to back it up. So it imposes restraint. In fact, Pence, in a speech that he made to the Detroit Economic Club in November of 2010, said this: "My dear friend, the late Jack Kemp, probably would have urged me to adopt the gold standard right here and now in Detroit. Robert Zoellick, the president of the World Bank, encouraged that we rethink the international currency system, including the role of gold, and I agree. I think the time has come to have a debate over gold and the proper role it should play in our nation's monetary affairs. A pro-growth agenda begins with sound monetary policy." Donald Trump seems to agree. He said this: "Bringing back the gold standard would be very hard to do, but boy, would it be wonderful, because we would have a standard on which to base our money." Well, certainly for those of us that believe a sound money policy makes sense, think that this is good news. Now, Dr. Judy Shelton was one of two economists named to the Trump Economic Advisory Team in August. She is now a member of the formal transition team. And Dr. Shelton is a very strong gold supporter. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with Dr. Shelton, She first rose to prominence among economists when she predicted the economic collapse of the Soviet Union back in 1989, a full 2 years before it actually happened. She claims that many of the same deadly conditions are now appearing in the U.S. banking system, and I would certainly agree with that. In fact, stay tuned, because in one of the future segments today, I will be talking to David Skorica about the risks that exist worldwide in the banking system. So what is Dr. Shelton's solution? Well, she would install the gold standard. She wrote in an article that was published in Fortune magazine this: "In terms of gold being involved, some people may think of it as a throwback, but I see it as a sophisticated, forward-looking approach because gold is neutral and it is universal." Now, if you're just tuning in, as I mentioned at the outset today, this is the second to the last program that will be aired as far as the Everything Financial Radio program. If you would like to go back and listen to any of the interviews that I've done here with the guest experts over the past 6 years, all you need to do is visit everythingfinancialradio.com. The website again, everythingfinancialradio.com. And if you'd like to keep in touch, simply go to yourportfoliowatch.com and sign up for our free weekly newsletter. The website, yourportfoliowatch.com. I'll be back with David Skorica after these words. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. As I mentioned at the outset, this is the second to last Everything Financial Radio program that will be aired. If you'd like to keep in touch, go sign up for our free newsletter. It's called Portfolio Watch, and you can sign up at yourportfoliowatch.com. I'm pleased to have as a returning guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Mr. David Skorica. David's got a very interesting background. At the age of 18, he became the youngest person to pass the Canadian Securities Course. He's the author of Stock Market Panic, How to Prosper in the Coming Bear Market, The Contrarian Who Saved the World. He also has a widely read newsletter, Addicted to Profits. He's been publishing that since 1998. You can learn more about his newsletter at addictedtoprofits.net. And Dave, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Hey, Dave, we just recently being in the last month and a half or so, saw an election in which we had Donald Trump elected. And since that time, we have seen the markets, the stock markets, go crazy. That's not true, obviously, of the gold and bond markets, which we'll talk about. But to what do you attribute this huge rally?
Well, see, what's interesting is I was on the consensus in that, I wasn't on the consensus in that I thought Trump was going to win. But I was in a consensus where I thought, you know, you would probably see this knee-jerk sell-off similar to what happened after the Brexit vote and gold would rally. But what has happened is, and I switched a lot of my positions. I could see that was not going to happen the day after the election. So I changed up a lot of my positions to become more market neutral. Like I kind of had more bets to the downside before the election. So what I did was I have actually read a lot about Trump's policies. And I think the problem is people are too focused on his personality or some of the bombastic things he says or the fact that, you know, that he's got business interests all over the world. And they're not actually looking at these policies. And what they want to do is really change a lot of the structure of the economy. You know, like a lot of the guys who are working for him do kind of follow the Ayn Rand kind of school, more free market type people. And not only that, they want to do things like they know that, you know, one of the ways that GDP is calculated is, you know, when you have a larger trade deficit, it takes away from your growth. So they want to do things like sell more energy to China, and they'll keep buying Chinese goods. I don't think these big trade wars at first are really going to come about because that's how they're planning to do things. And also, a lot of his policy makers and people around him, they don't believe in these zero rates. They don't believe in these negative interest rates. They don't believe in these things. They actually believe that it takes away from savings. It takes away from investment. So that also told you that bonds were going to sell off because they actually want rates a little higher in the short term so savers can get a little bit more on their money, especially with the population aging. So I could see that these things were going to go on. And also, a lot of his, again, policymakers believe in the strong dollar policy. So I figured we would see this kind of rally in the dollar. So I sold some of my gold stocks in our newsletter in the summer during the spike, and then I sold some more the day after the election. I still have a small position, and we actually even bought some gold bear funds to profit from this. So what I think this all means in the long run, though, is and I was telling you about this before we went on air. There's a great documentary by a guy named Adam Curtis, who works for the BBC, and it's called Hypernormalization. And what hypernormalization was, it was a term used in the Soviet Union in the 70s, and that they had this kind of fake system and fake economy. But don't believe the propaganda that all these Russians were gung-ho. By the 70s, 80s, people there knew the system was failing. The economy was no good. You had the failed war in Afghanistan. So people knew things were bad, but they didn't know anything else. So it was like this fake system no one believed in, but they didn't know anything else, so that's all they could believe in. And they didn't want to know what could happen if it ended. So I believe we kind of have this hyper-normalized stock market where through central bank intervention, you know, zero interest rates, quantitative easing, you've kind of had this market go up with no volatility for a number of years now. And I think one thing these policy shifts are going to do, and we're shifting from this kind of central bank-orientated, financial-orientated economy to this economy where actually political policies are going to start driving things a bit more. It's going to also be the end of this low volatility. The market going up with very little corrections, and we've seen it. The rally has been volatile and fierce to the upside. It's the biggest rally ever since 1900, post the president being elected. So I think now we're going to see way more volatility and kind of end this hyper-normalized central bank-influenced, solely driven stock market and economy.
So, David, you know, we've talked about the fact that the market here, the stock market anyway, looks overvalued given that, according to the data I've read, we've seen corporate earnings decline over the past couple of years as the market has continued to rally. To what extent do you think that this unleashed energy sector can help keep this market at least neutralized, if not moving higher?
Well, that was one of the sectors I actually started buying into in November. I think there's something interesting about energy, just on a side note, a macro note. You know, the Saudi Arabians are going to have their massive oil company go public sometime in the next year or two. So I think that's why they're propping up energy prices. You know, they did a cut in output because they want to get as much as they can or raise as much money as they can when this company goes public. And then the insiders probably want to sell as much as they can at a half decent price, too. So I think that's an interesting note to watch, is that they might keep the supply off the market until they can get that IPO going. But, yes, a lot of this increase in earnings is simply just going to be a bounce in energy companies. You got oil going from the 20s and 30s into the 50s. So, remember, that's only going to really be a huge factor for the first 3 to 6 months. And the thing is, the problem in the intermediate term, and by intermediate term, I mean a year or two, and the end of this kind of no volatility market, is really the easiest path is going to be to the downside. Now, you may agree with maybe a lot of the policies that Trump is doing, and, you know, with deregulation, et cetera, but the problem is you've got this stock market, which is, you know, you take like, actually the best indicator is not even price to earnings ratio. It's that market cap to GDP, taking the stock market and showing it as a percentage of the economy. Outside of the 2000 bubble, using that metric, which is, by the way, Warren Buffett's favorite metric, the stock market has never been this overvalued. So we have this massive overvaluation in the market. So I think what will probably happen is you might continue this rally for a while, but at some point, with rates going higher, and you know, probably the central bank less willing to come to the rescue, because let's face it, the powers that be in that arena probably do not like the powers that be in the political arena. So you could definitely see a big move to the downside. And by the way, another thing that I've noted with the stock market, all these cheap money things that have influenced it, stock buybacks, huge boom in corporate borrowing, people say buying dividend stocks because there's no yield in government bonds. I feel that that is based on the government bond being below 3%, especially 4%. So if you saw that 10-year yield go over 3 to 4%, that is when I think you could see the unraveling of a lot of these equity bubble trades, which are totally based on interest rates remaining at artificially low levels.
So, David, you think that, and in fact, one of the things I've been looking at is that the U.S. dollar has gotten significantly stronger, almost as like an unnoticed or unreported story. Is that the beginning of deflation, and could that be maybe one of the proverbial straws that breaks the back of the stock market moving ahead?
I don't know if it's deflation, because actually, outside of gold and silver, we talked about energy, a lot of commodities have actually acted well because the Trump policies are seen as good for, say, more demand, especially a potential infrastructure program. But what I believe, and remember, in the early 80s, you had a very strong dollar, and it wasn't deflationary, from about 82 to 85. So what I actually believe is policy divergence. It's the U.S. is raising rates at a time when Japan is still printing money, Europe is still printing money, and those two areas, which are two still of the largest economies in the world. Remember, the Eurozone, if you take it as a whole, is actually a larger economy than the United States. You have these two large economies still keeping rates at zero and printing while the U.S. is raising rates. And then a lot of the other countries in the world, like the U.K. or Canada, are nowhere close to raising rates. If anything, they might do another cut or two. So I really think it's this policy divergence. But here's what's so dangerous about this policy divergence. There were hundreds of billions, estimated trillions of dollars created in emerging market debt based in U.S. dollars. The idea was rates are low in the United States. The dollar was weak at the time and weak for a significant period of time. So, let's go to Brazil and buy bonds based in U.S. dollars from Brazilian companies yielding 7, 8, 9, 10%. Same thing in Turkey. Same thing in China. So I think where this policy divergence and this strong dollar really is at risk is if all of a sudden you have a currency crisis, be it in China, be it in Brazil, be it in Turkey, and in one of these countries that kind of does what the Thai baht devaluation did in 1997, kind of triggers this domino effect of these emerging market currencies crashing. What's so dangerous about that is, like I just said, there have been a huge amount of money issued in U.S. dollar terms in these domestic companies, in these countries, as people kind of reached for yield. And really, like I said earlier, that 10-year bond in the U.S., if it goes over 3%, and especially 4%, that trade makes no sense anymore. That trade was based on, interest rates remaining low. So I don't know if the strong dollar represents deflation, but I think it definitely risks the explosion of something in the financial world due to policy divergence. And, for example, Kyle Bass, he thinks it's going to come out of China. He thinks the Chinese banks are all insolvent. The Chinese bonds, by the way, are really spiking in interest rates since the Fed raised rates. And the idea there would be, that could stifle their property boom and then cause the Chinese government to have to basically do what the U.S. government did in 2008, bail out their banks, move the debt from the private sector to the public sector. And the yuan would have to see a big readjustment to the downside if that happens. And, of course, that's when the deflation could kick in, because China is still easily the largest buyer of commodities in the world. So it's kind of – it's a trigger to trigger a big deflationary trade. And the last thing on inflation deflation, as much as I'm seen as a commodities guy, I am very apprehensive about these rallies in iron ore, in copper. And the reason being is not just the strength of the U.S. dollar, but if Trump does infrastructure, he can do $100 billion a year. It's basically what China does in a week. It's not really that big of a deal. So I think the market is pricing too much of this in when it's really still Chinese and Indian demand that drive the demand for commodities.
Well, we are going to have to leave it there for this segment. Our guest today is Mr. David Skarica. His newsletter is Addicted to Profits. You can learn more at addictedtoprofits.net. I'll continue my conversation with David Skarica when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. My guest today is Mr. David Skarica. His newsletter is Addicted to Profits. His newsletter is focused on the technical analysis of markets. I'd encourage you to learn more at addictedtoprofits.net. And David, I want to go back and revisit something that you talked about in the last segment. You mentioned the Thai currency devaluation of 1997 and said, you know, something like that were to repeat, that could be the catalyst that might trigger a deflationary event. Can you go back and maybe educate the listeners as to what actually happened there?
Yeah, what happened is in the mid-90s, there is this huge boom in emerging markets. Some of the similar aspects of today, you had interest rates going down as they continued their, like the bonds continued their long-term bull market, interest rates continuing their long-term downtrend. A lot of these countries really opened up along with China in the 90s, so they had huge capital inflows, but their models were quite flawed. They were basically what's called a mercantilistic economy, which means that they're essentially like just exporting, and they didn't really have a lot of domestic demand, and they didn't have a lot of currency reserves. So what happened was in the summer of 97, I'm not getting into every detail, but Thailand devalued its currency. And at first, no one cared. Like the Dow kept going higher into early of October of 1997. But what then happened is because the Thailand devalued its currency, then South Korea devalued their currency, Taiwan devalued their currency. So what essentially happened was it was like competing devaluations because these are all export economies and they had to compete with each other. And you had kind of they call them the bond vigilantes or the currency vigilantes were in there pounding their currencies because these countries had a lot of capital controls at the time, didn't really have true free movement of money. So they were, and because they were so small, all the hot money that came in, it really blew up their currencies when it all moved out quickly because, they didn't have large sophisticated markets yet either. So anyhow, that's basically it. That's what happened. And then because of all these other currency devaluations and because of a situation similar to now, where a lot of demand for commodities was coming out of Asia at that time, the price of the commodities really got smashed in 97, 98. The stock market got smashed. And then that ultimately led to the Russian currency crisis of 1998, which was a much actually worse crisis. Russia actually went bankrupt and had a default on their debt, and the correction in 98 was pretty vicious. So that's essentially what it is that you've got all this money that's gone into emerging markets, which are now a lot larger part of the global economy, and if you get one country getting into problems, it just becomes this domino effect and can kind of spread to other countries. And one of the reasons it's spreading because these other countries might be more willing to let their currencies devalue because they want to become more competitive. I think actually the country that's most at risk right now is Turkey, because Turkey has what's called a huge current account deficit. Essentially, in layman's terms, there's way more money going out of the country than coming in. And they funded this deficit by, basically corporate borrowing. There's been a huge boom in corporate borrowing. And we all know that Turkey, too, has a lot of political problems right now, and they've had a property bubble there as well. So if Turkey blows up, I think that could kind of lead to a domino effect in some of these other emerging markets. But that's really interesting to watch because, basically Thailand devalued and then it spread all over the place. And now, a lot of the new demand in the global economy was coming from Asia at the time. So if something happens in Turkey or China, et cetera, that could spread as well. And like I said, a lot of this trade in those countries, in Turkey, is based on these rates staying ultra-low here in the West. So if those rates keep ticking up, it's going to put a huge amount of pressure on those financial conditions in those countries. And by the way, just a last note here, in Turkey, you may say, oh, Turkey's nothing. Well, Turkey's actually the 15th or 17th, depending on the metrics you look at, economy in the world. So it's actually quite a big place, you know, especially if it enters a crisis.
And David, the other risk, I think, for deflation, which I'm in that camp, I think, ultimately, that we're going to have to see deflation. If you take a look at the leverage within the big Western banks, I mean, the derivative exposure is huge. Couldn't that be a catalyst that also triggers this next crisis?
Yeah, I think especially the European banks are very undercapitalized. I think this recent backup in long-term rates has helped them because, you know, those spread in rates really helps the bank's balance sheets, really helps their model. So, like, you look at Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank was actually a stock I was short throughout the year, but I covered it actually, you know, happily right before this big rallies happened in the stock. And and if you go look at a stock like Deutsche Bank, that's, you know, really what could happen. If you get a derivative mess or something trigger or something blow up, you could have a major bank go under. And, you know, we've already seen huge problems at the Italian banks. The third largest bank in Italy, Monte dei Paschi, is probably going to be nationalized. So, yeah, definitely a trigger in the banks. But I would think this time the problems are probably more in the European banks than in the U.S. banks. The U.S. banks have, you know, kind of been recapitalized. You know, they're going to have, in the short term, less problems. Now, ultimately, I think a huge problem for these banks could be, and this is what bankrupted all the banks in Greece, is that if I'm right, and this ultimately leads to some global debt crisis, say, I don't know, in 3, 5, 7 years, well, those banks all own a ton of government bonds. And if the yield on the U.S. government bond, for example, goes back to 6 or 7%, that's basically where it was in the late 90s, the government basically can't fund itself. And that means all these bonds that these banks own maybe can't be paid back, or you're going to have to – then you could go from deflation to hyperinflation because the government just have to print to pay off these debts. So, I definitely agree that these things that I'm talking about, they could probably trigger a crisis in some kind of bank. Because if Deutsche Bank, for example, I'm not saying they do, but if they had a trade on which was dependent on these emerging market debt doing well, and then that something like Turkey collapsed, that could trigger huge, huge losses in one of their trading desks, which would probably be also hugely leveraged, and that could basically take the bank under. If you remember, I mentioned the currency crisis earlier, 97, 98, long-term capital management, which was kind of like the Lehman Brothers at the time in 1998, that is why they went down. They actually had a bet on that rates wouldn't go down in North America, and they would stay low in places like Russia. And then, of course, when the financial crisis happened in Russia and the rates spiked up to the bonds collapse, that basically ended them. They almost took down the entire market with them in 1998. So, yeah, definitely, I would say that one of these crises could trigger another banking crisis. And I think more than likely, though, I think the crises will happen at a European bank this time.
David, you mentioned that if the yield on U.S. government bonds gets back to that 6 or 7% range, the government won't be able to fund itself, and the Fed may be forced to print. I mean, isn't that really the only end game short of a huge deflationary, you know, asset pricing reset?
Yeah, I think that is the end game. And I think I don't think these central banks are dumb as people paint them out to be. And what I mean by that is, I think they're planning for that. You look at Japan, which is a completely unsustainable debt of 250% to GDP. If their rates go to 2%, you know, they're basically broke. You know, so I think the plan is through the QE. I think part of the plan has been, well, let's get a certain amount of that debt on the central bank balance sheet, and then we could just make that, say, 100 or 1,000 year bond with zero interest. So essentially, you've just almost written off that portion of the debt without an actual default. So I think something like that may happen in the future. And I think that's why ultimately, you know, you're never going to see the Fed sell, you know, some of these securities onto the market. That's ultimately why you're going to see this. You're just going to, you're going to see a portion of this debt that's on the central bank balance sheet get written off, you know, and then they might have to even print more to keep adding that on to the central bank's balance sheet. So what's interesting is I believe what you were saying about deflation. I believe we're probably going to have a deflationary period like 2008 again. And then that we followed by a hyperinflationary period, because if you also get the wipeout of kind of like these bond market bubbles in corporate markets, the money, when it's printed next time, is not going to move into financial assets. It's probably going to move into commodities, into hard assets, into things that, you know, the government basically can't print, you know. So that will probably happen, though. But I think you need this kind of trigger first. I think you need whatever it is, a European bank, China, Turkey, whatever the catalyst is, you need some kind of deflationary event to happen. And with the market so overvalued now, it's going to be very vulnerable to something like that happening, you know. But that's the problem all over the world. Like, you know, like you look at Italy, Italy's debt to GDP is 130%. If rates go up 6% there, they're in big trouble.
Yeah, you know, and Ava, when more money's printed, then that brings us back to the currency crisis, because at a certain point, an amount of printing, and I guess that amount maybe nobody knows for sure, we then begin to destroy the integrity of a currency. And isn't these things is like, it's like one big vicious cycle.
Yeah, I think the first place that might play out, you know, there's this trade in Japan when financial assets are weak, the yen goes up, and when markets are strong, the yen goes down. I think we're coming the end of that trade, because I think Japan's getting to that point that you're talking about. Their central bank head there, Kuroda, recently said they would print as much money as possible to keep the 10-year bond at 0%, right? So that means to me that Japan's going to keep printing and printing and printing, and at some point you might just see a currency crash in Japan before anywhere else, because, you know, their debt to GDP is way ahead of anywhere else in the world. So I think that's the first country you may see this kind of play out. And then it's, again, like a domino or a trickle effect, because the entire Western world is over indebted. It could go from country to country. And by the way, this is, you know, I talked about these policy shifts and what Trump wants to do earlier. This is the one problem and the headwinds to a lot of these things, is that, you know, you have these bubbles in the bond market, you've got these governments with huge debts, you've got the stock market at bubble valuations. So these are going to be huge headwinds. And, you know, if you're a contrarian, you know, I can't get too excited about how excited people are now in the market, you know.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today is Mr. David Skorica. The good news is we're going to have him back for one more segment. I'd encourage you to stay tuned. We'll continue our conversation with David Skorica when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Joining me on today's program is Mr. David Skorica. David is the author and publisher of the newsletter Addicted to Profits. I'd encourage you to check it out at addictedtoprofits.net. And David, if you take a look at what's happened just to the long-term, the 30-year U.S. government bond, we saw rates from, you know, earlier this year, like July, it was just over 2%. Now we're up pushing like 3.1%, 3.2%. What's happened?
Well, I think it's this trade that I mentioned, that people see. I think the market is sensing these policy shifts, that you have this again, like I said, the end of this hyper-normalization of the central banks creating these quote-unquote fake markets. And, you know, that trade got unwound a bit. So, and you know, with the potential infrastructure program, which Trump has talked about him wanting to do, you know, you might have larger deficits, so the bond market might be starting to discount that. But in a cycle term, not looking at the actual news behind it, bond market cycles are really long. The last bond market bull market was from 1981 to the top, as of now, was this past summer, which is 35 years. The last bear market in bonds was from the late 40s to 1981, which was actually over 30 years, and the bull market before that was from 1919 to the late 40s, which was 30 years. So we can see these bond cycles are really, really long. And they tend to last about 30 or 35 years. So I think we're near the end of the mega bull market cycle in bonds, and this bear market cycle is unwound. And probably the height of the mania in bonds was when, you know, something like $12 or $14 trillion of global bonds were trading at negative yields. So I just think we're just seeing the unwinding of that cycle. And just a quick note, the bonds look like they have a huge topping pattern going back to about 2012, 13. And we're in a sweet spot right now. That's why bank stocks have done well, you know, because like I said, they prosper when long-term rates go up and the yield curve steepens. But I think this is a sweet spot where the government can still fund themselves at 2, 3, 4% interest rates. It's good for the banks. It's good for savers. But you get to the point where it goes from good to bad when that sell-off to 3 or 4% goes to 5 or 6. Now, in the short term, I'm not really bearish on bonds. I think we saw that first good drop off the top. We'll probably see some sort of rally over the first half of next year in bonds. But I think the real interesting thing to watch is what happens after that rally. And let's say there is a big dump in the stock market next year or 2018. Bonds will probably get a bid during that decline. But what happens after that decline and another round of quantitative easing? I think that's really when the deficits will blow up and you'll see the bond yields really, really begin to spike.
And you'd said another round of quantitative easing. I've had guests on the program that say that that's very unlikely because it hasn't worked. I look at it and say, what are the other options? I think they're going to have to do that. What do you think?
See, I think we believe the same thing because the next quantitative easing isn't going to be about inflating housing or art or stock market prices. It's going to be about these governments being so broke that they're the only real buyers out there for their own bonds, and they're going to have to try to keep the yields low enough so they can keep their head above water. Remember, Draghi had that do anything, you know, at all costs kind of speech in 2012 when a lot of European countries were going to the brink. You know, places like Ireland were in the double digits on the 10-year bond. You know, I mentioned Italy earlier. Spain and Italy were at 7, 8%. So, and that was it. Like, they were at the breaking point at that point. So they had to do something. So I think that's when the next quantitative easing kind of comes in. And by the way, I think, you know, just kind of segue into gold here, that is when you'll see a big turn in the gold and precious metals market. Like I mentioned earlier in the show, when I saw these kind of policies, we're going to be short-term good for the dollar, probably means, you know, short-term bearish for bonds or higher interest rates. I knew in the short term it wouldn't be good for gold, but I think that when that policy shift comes where the U.S. goes from raising rates to cutting them and probably doing QE again, that is when you'll see an explosion in gold. So in gold, I don't know, it could go back to 1,100, could even go back to the lows. Seasonally, December is usually a month where it can bottom. It bottomed in December, January of last year. And to January 2016. So it could bottom here, but I think it's more important to note that this policy shift from, you know, the Fed raising rates to probably cutting and doing more QE is going to happen over the next year or two. Now, the only thing about the QE, I will say, because I do believe most of the Fed members are no fans of Trump, they're not going to be there to the rescue, I think, as fast as they would have been in the past. So I think they'll still do it out of necessity, but I think you might see more carnage in the stock and bond markets before they start. I think that would be the only thing I would realize. But when that shift comes from higher rates to loosening again, I think that's when gold explodes.
So, David, when you take a look at gold, and I think you alluded to this, that we've got to be pretty close to as low as gold is probably going to go, because aren't we pretty close to what the all-in production cost is for gold at this point?
Well, I think you can go below that. I've been in this gold market for 20 years, and I remember the late 90s when I first started, and you know, like, I think the all-in cost there was like $350, and gold went to $250, right? So, but the problem at that time, that was mixed by a lot of companies had sold forward production at that time to keep their head above water, a lot more than is going on today. But, yeah, I think that $1,000 area is pretty psychologically key. I think the all-in costs you know, we'll keep it above that. And I think another real key factor is psychology. That, you know, in the summer, we actually saw a lot of bullishness re-enter the gold market. Those people all got whacked, and now we see bearishness re-entering again. So I think that we can bottom from then. And from a trading pattern standpoint, there's an interesting similarity to the last major gold bottom of 2000-2001, in that in December of 2000, the stocks all began to really, really rally hard. But gold actually kept falling into April of 2001. It went back to its 1999 lows. But the stocks really held up. And we're seeing the stocks perform way better in comparison to gold in the last 6-9 months. So we could get a scenario I could see where gold goes to a new low, but if I watch it, if these stocks are still 20-30% above their lows of January 2016 at that time, I would think that's a big non-confirmation and a sign that, you know, they're going to start another multi-year bull market.
So your advice now, we've got about a minute left. Your advice for your readers about gold, can you summarize that?
Yeah, I would start to slowly re-enter the gold trade. I'm not someone who likes to go all in, but, you know, if you're rebalancing your portfolio, obviously gold would be a smaller part with this drop. Buy some more gold here. And if you're someone, if you want a dollar cost average, I think as long as gold's under 1,200, I think that's a great time to dollar cost average into the stocks or the bullion.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. David Skorica. His newsletter is Addicted to Profits. You can check out the website, addictedtoprofits.net. I'd encourage you to do that. And David, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, if you just happened to tune in and catch the last part of today's Everything Financial radio program, let me remind you that this program is the second to the last Everything Financial radio program that will air. We'd like to invite you to keep in touch by signing up for our newsletter titled Portfolio Watch. In it, we talk about what's going on in the economy, what's going on in the markets, and what it might mean for you and your money. We will continue to publish that. It's delivered free via email every Monday at 5 p.m. To sign up, visit the website yourportfoliowatch.com. That's your, Y-O-U-R, portfoliowatch.com. All you need to do is enter your name and email address on the site, and every Monday, you'll get our free Portfolio Watch newsletter. Tell your friends as well. The website is yourportfoliowatch.com. And as I close, we do have a special free report titled, Should I Buy Metals? You can request your copy by visiting shouldibuymetals.com. The website, again, is shouldibuymetals.com. We've had a lot of requests to develop some educational materials about buying metals. So in response to those requests, we did it. Visit the website, shouldibuymetals.com, to request your free report. That's all the time I have for this week. Hope you'll tune in again next week. Bye.